The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Two administration officials have told MS Now that the speech will focus on voting machine security and alleged foreign efforts to influence U.S. elections. The text of the speech is not final, but Trump is expected to release a declassified intelligence documents on both of those subjects. We will once again note that extensive intel reviews under both the Trump and Biden administrations found no basis for claims that the 2020 election was stolen. We do know, though, that 4 years earlier, Russia certainly did meddle in the 2016 elections to Trump's benefit. There are a lot of Republicans who this is the last thing they want President Trump to talk about. This is ancient history. It's 6 years ago. It's not popular with the public. It reminds people of what happened on January 6th and the like. Yet Trump persists to do it anyway.
It's ancient history. So there you go. 6 years and you just have to move on. You just have to go forward. Notice, too, these people are shameless, by the way. He in the same sentence, we know 2020, it was perfect. And we know that 2016 was not. Because, well, the dear leader told us. And so here they are. They haven't even heard the speech yet. You would think as reporters, these are supposed to be news gatherers, right? And what about listening to the President of the United States first, seeing what he has to say, analyzing the speech? But no, their heads explode before he even gives the speech. They've been exposed as liars. When I heard all of these clips this morning, I just thought back over all of those hearings in Georgia, in Arizona, in Pennsylvania, in Michigan. Remember all the eyewitnesses that came up, and I forget how many affidavits were signed? They can go on and on, these people, these talking heads, about how that the courts didn't back President Trump. They didn't. But there's mountains of evidence of cheating, of wrongdoing, of middle-of-the-night ballot dumps. You know, you were there. 6 years ago is not six centuries ago. We showed you so much of that footage on this program. One of the few, by the way. And here you heard him say, administration officials are telling us this. What is wrong with these people? Even in the Trump administration, giving these leaks? This is what he's going to talk about. This is what we need to try to suppress. Those people, the ones on the inside, they lack the courage to stand against the dear leader, to go on the offensive. So what if it's 6 years ago? If there's evidence of an election steal, this is huge. Yeah, the 2020 was perfect, and we also know, say these shameless reporters, that 2016... Well, Russia meddled in that one to help Donald Trump. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. I have to catch my breath. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at the website, thetrumpet.com, or at the Rumble channel or the YouTube channel. Lots to get to on today's show. Today being also the 37-year anniversary of Malachi's message when God started pouring revelation back into the church. There had been quite the dry spell following Mr. Armstrong's death. And you can read about the rain pouring down again there at the end of James chapter 5. We'll go through some of those verses toward the end of the show. Look at how easily those statements can be challenged with mountains of evidence. Yeah, the Russia hoax in the same sentence. 2020 was perfect. Yes, Joe Biden is the most popular president in the history of America. Got it. And Trump wouldn't have won in 2016 were it not for his friend Vlad. That's right. And we know this. Here are the news gatherers looking you in the eye and saying, just believe what I say. Just believe it. I think it was Steve Bannon earlier today. The whole premise for these platforms, for MS Now, it's Trump derangement syndrome. Everything flows through that vision, those spectacles. That's how they see everything. And so if Trump won, well, naturally, it was stolen. If Trump loses, well, naturally, it was perfect. There's their worldview. It's the same every day. You get the same meltdowns flowing from the same spirit. It makes you think of John 8 and verse 44. And the father of lies and the father of murder. The Russia hoax, spying on President Trump and his team, harassing him with fake impeachment hearings, setting up a fake insurrection, all of the lawfare, actual assassination attempts, four that we know of. The one in Butler, the one at the golf course, the one recently at the UFC event. The FBI told us about that just a couple days before it was supposed to happen. And then you had the correspondence dinner and gunshots fired off in the lobby. The guy actually, he got a reservation at the very hotel that was hosting the event that had not just Donald Trump there, but all of his staff, so many of them. That's what these talking heads are inciting. And they put on a nice suit, don't they? And they sound so balanced and fair, speaking in measured tones until their head blows up or explodes. But that's the current that we're having to swim against. A world filled with lies. I'll get to the latest article. Last week, it was the end of reading. It's here. This week, we've got an article, the end of history. It's here. How dangerous are these times when you have total ignorance when it comes to lessons of history? To just take one example, Hosea 4 says God's people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. The technology is getting more sophisticated and we're becoming dumber. How does this happen? It's exactly the way God said it would be. And people ought to wake up. 6 years goes by like the snap of a finger. And yet here are the talking heads speaking of it as if it's ancient history. They are ignorant of history. And it's not like it's just one political party. I'll give you the clips from Macron and Germany's rearmament. That too reveals some ignorance when it comes to history. Ignorance on both sides of the aisles. Ignorance in Europe. How could it happen again? How could a military machine be constructed in the heart of Germany again? And now Germany has the empire. Germany has the 10 kings. It doesn't need to march through Czechoslovakia or Poland or France. They're already in the camp. And you've got Macron out there saying, yeah, we need a machine. And of course, Germany is the natural leader. Everyone knows this. But what happened 70, 80 years ago? What happened a little over 100 years ago? Well, that's ancient history. That's ancient. Everything is so much better today. We've moved on, haven't we? Same reasoning that you heard in the cold open. Listen, we've moved on. We've heard from Trump officials that they just want to move on. Just move on from all the lies, from all the corruption, from all the wickedness. Is that what we're doing with World War II as well? The worst ever war on this planet. Some 60 million casualties. And so we can't even pause and say, I don't know about, okay, it's one thing to be in control of NATO and say to the partners, pay your fair share. It's another thing to say, hey, pay your fair share, pay more. And by the way, we'll see you later. You're on your own. That's what's happening. And people can't see it. Why? Well, because we're living in the age of the end of history. The post-truth era is here. We're living in it. Listen to one more from MS Now, clip 9.
You have covered many, many presidential addresses to the nation over the years. Can you put into context for us how unusual this one sounds like it's going to be?
It does sound like it's going to be unusual. Oval Office addresses to the nation traditionally are on matters of great national import that are not political. They don't usually have a political sheen, right? They're times of war. They're major disasters. There's large challenges to the nation when we have, you know, some overarching concern that have people at home worried and a president is trying to find ways of addressing their concerns. You know, they don't usually concern things that are so overtly political and particularly overtly partisan. That's in fact one of the reasons why the networks didn't take President Biden's speech in September 2022, which was meant to be an Oval Office address. Sorry, not Oval Office. It was in Philadelphia, but a nighttime primetime speech to the nation. That the networks decided not to take it live because they felt it was too political. That's the choice they have tonight. Do they take something that seems to be about advancing the president's political interest and the narrative that he has been trying to sell people on about the credibility of elections, meaning particularly elections he loses?
Translation, blot out the speech tonight. The networks shouldn't even show it. We've been here before. What did he say after the fake insurrection? I had no voice, said President Trump. They don't want him to even speak. They don't want him to have a platform. They don't want to listen to the speech. And here, this guy, I think he writes for the New York Times, talking as if this president is the only one in history to give a political speech? Seriously? You go back to the hoax. What about the Russia hoax? The Russian meddling? Obama and Brennan and them hurrying along with this special assessment showing that, well, it turns out Vladimir, he did meddle. He did help Trump. That was all a hoax. That, you think that was politically motivated? Once When Obama says before the 2016 election, there's no possible way you could rig an election in the United States. It's too decentralized. It can't happen. And then Hillary loses. There is every possible way that the election can be rigged. That's what Obama said just a month or two later. Do you think politics factored into that? Or any of the spying? Or the intel community digging up all this dirt, including lies in the Steele dossier, and then getting the FISA warrant? Do you think any of that was politically motivated? Do you think they would have done that if Hillary would have won in 2016? These people, as I say, they're shameless. They're so biased. They're deranged. They really are delusional. And it's delusional thinking like this plays on the airwaves every day that motivates murderers, assassins. How could you look at any of this and not conclude that we are headed for civil war? There was a time when the news gatherers would be respectful enough to at least hear what the president had to say in a speech in the Oval Office or one of the rooms there in the White House. I forget which one. It's not like he speaks that often. But they've already decided that what he's going to speak tonight, it's all lies. And what we have is all the truth. And listen, 6 years ago is ancient history. All you need to do is watch MS Now. Interesting that they changed the name to that, by the way. Just focus on now. What I'm saying to you right now, the end of history, it really and truly is upon us. The title of the piece, it's by Neil Ferguson and John Clark Levin. It's titled The Death of History. This is Ferguson on a podcast talking about some of the content in this article, clip 10.
Well, there's history and there's anti-history. And history is based on scholarship. It's based on reading the documents, the contemporary letters and the diaries, understanding the past, getting inside the minds of the decision makers. This is history. And then anti-history is that you go on Tucker Carlson's podcast and he says you're a great historian. You've never written any history books. And then you just make shit up. And so when a figure like Darryl Cooper is presented as a serious historian, I'm at this point convinced that podcasts must be the work of the devil. I've long had this suspicion. I know this is a podcast, but let me just point out that podcasts are probably the work of the devil, and books are the work of God, and history is in books. It's only from books that you can learn history, because only in books are there footnotes, and only in the footnotes are there the references that you can check to make sure that it wasn't made up. So clearly when someone like Cooper goes on Carlson's podcast and says, no, Churchill was the real villain of World War II, you know, the Germans, you know, they had a few Jews that they had to feed and they didn't have quite enough food and so they kind of died. And it's when people start saying these things that are egregious lies, then you must speak out against it.
Yeah, and there's more to it, though, than that. What does it say about our world? It says we're living in perilous times. That's in 2 Timothy 3. And when you think about these articles, the last one was at The Atlantic. The end of reading is here. And here's Ferguson promoting books, and there's a lot to be said for that. But even books. What did Solomon write? He said, the words of the wise are as goads and as nails fastened by the masters of assemblies, which are given from one shepherd. It says, and further, this is the end of Ecclesiastes, by these, my son, be admonished of making many books. There's no end. And much study is a weariness of the flesh. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole man. Fear God, keep his commandments. There's a lot to be said for reading books, but you need to read the right ones, and you need to read what's based on the Holy Bible. That's the foundation of all knowledge. Fear God and keep his commandments. The reason we're seeing the spirit of deception and so many lies and so many shameless speeches and cold opens is because there's no fear of God. Paul wrote about that in Romans 3. It's because there's so much lawlessness and corruption. There's so much sin. We're just drenched in sin. And so now, yeah, he's right. People just get a podcast and they start talking about this guy's a good historian when he didn't even write a history book. And then millions, in some cases, millions go away from that. I mean, there have been voices like Joe Rogan that have amplified this. It's not like it's just Tucker or just Darryl Cooper. It's a dangerous time. This article on the death of history, it says, as the algorithmic age takes Holocaust denial mainstream, historians must admit a bitter defeat. The return of Holocaust denial was not something we foresaw from the 1960s through the 2000s. It had been essentially an exercise in historical fraud perpetrated by cranks. You remember in the early 2000s when, I think it was even Bill Clinton. No, that was in the 90s. When Yasser Arafat and his people were going on and on about denying the Holocaust. And even Bill Clinton couldn't believe it. What are you talking about? That was a Democrat 20-some years ago. I'm just working from memory here. If I got the personalities wrong. But he's right. There was a time when it was perpetrated by the cranks. But now what? Well, now it's kind of edgy. Yeah, there's a shock value. It prompts you or motivates you to stop scrolling. This sounds different. This sounds interesting. Hitler was a pretty cool guy. And I guess Churchill was the bad guy. Churchill was the villain. It says, by contrast, the podcast boom of the late 2010s saw the rise of anti-history, a new brand of Holocaust denial that threw off the shackles of quotes and footnotes altogether in favor of freewheeling YouTube rants and edgy Rumble live streams. Its standard bearers were well-groomed and affable. They wooed viewers with the transgressive thrill of supposedly forbidden knowledge. Well, this is some new thing. It's like what it says about the Athenians in Acts 17. Back then, the Apostle Paul taking the true gospel to these regions that had never heard it, they had never been exposed to it, and it was some new thing, and that's the only fascination they had with it. They didn't fear God and keep the commandments, but they did assemble around Paul to listen to what he had to say. It's the same intellectual vanity that we struggle with today, only it's made worse because Satan and his demons are cast down. It's not that Satan just wants to blot out the history. That's part of it. He also creates the anti-history. Yeah, Hitler's a good guy now. We're now so enlightened that Hitler was mistreated. Hitler wasn't really guilty of all those atrocities. Hitler didn't try to conquer the world. Says Myron Gaines, a leading men's rights influencer whose macho finance and dating advice has propelled him to over a quarter billion views on YouTube alone, pulls no punches. Listen to this, a quarter billion views on YouTube. And what's he quoted as saying? Yeah, we like Hitler. Of course. We like Hitler. He posted that on X last year. It says, no one gives a bad word what you woke Jews think anymore. Hitler was a revolutionary leader and he saved Germany. The Jews declared war on Germany first. I guess that passes for history in today's world. The post-truth world. The article says, other haters with smaller platforms shrewdly amplify their virality with gimmicks that prompt even people repulsed by the message to watch and share onward. Further down it says, talking about Nick Fuentes, to him everything's just a big joke. He laughs Hitler off and says he was a pretty cool guy. It says, but when you ask one of them to explain Fuentes's ideas, the answer is usually hopelessly vague. You just got to watch for yourself, they reply, attaching a video longer than Lawrence of Arabia. What is it? What is it about it that's so fascinating? That's so mind-blowing? I can't really explain it, but just watch his video. He's pretty smooth. He's pretty charismatic. This is a tell, a sign that the true attraction isn't evidence or arguments, but instead the emotions Fuentes arouses. It's the same with these talking heads on MS Now. You can wheel in piles of evidence to a hearing, you know, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, or Phoenix, Arizona, and broadcast it on television, not on MS Now, not on CNN. But you can broadcast and then just get up the next day and say, there's no evidence. There is zero there are no witnesses that saw any wrongdoing. Everything was above board. The Russians, that I mean, they tried in 2016 and they succeeded in tampering with it. Now, the Chinese tried in 2020. They didn't succeed. No. It's pretty amazing to watch. It's all emotion. It makes you think of Ephesians 2, doesn't it? Satan being the prince of the power of the air. Put Ephesians 2 together with Revelation 12, the fact that Satan and his demons are cast down to this earth and they have surcharged the air with their ideas, their moods, their anti-history, their hatred, their lies, their deception. You can throw John 8:44 into the mix as well. Satan's the father of it. Satan is the god of this world, 2 Corinthians 4 and verse 4. You see why the scholars, even the conservative ones like Neil Ferguson, you see why they need this foundational book that is the Holy Bible? Because they could turn the Bible open to 2 Corinthians and find out, wow, well, that actually explains a lot. You mean Satan is this world's god? You mean Satan the devil is the prince of the power of the air in this world? You mean Satan is behind the spirit of murder, the spirit of assassination? If you'd open the inspired text, and if you had a humble, teachable attitude, those talking heads should be saying, wow, the spirit behind what I've been reporting, I better do some deep soul searching, some deep repenting, because I want to make sure I'm spreading truth, not lies. Lies that might motivate some deranged lunatic to go get his rifle and to try to shoot Donald Trump in the head. It happened 2 years ago. We covered that the other day on the show. So much of these so-called influencers, they put out their messages to shock people. But their message, you know, it says in that podcast or that clip I gave to you from Ferguson that we need to fight back. We need to fight against this. But these shock influencers making these shockingly immoral claims, and it's getting a lot of attention. It's getting more attention. They're becoming more popular, especially among young people, with most people just mindlessly scrolling away on their phone or on their device. You've got to say something that shocks them so that they'll pause. Just here, I'll send you the video. Just listen to Nick Fuentes. He's brilliant. He's got a large following. The end of history. It ties right in with these statements Macron made the other day, because they don't even have to hide it now, because the Trump administration is encouraging the formation of a European empire. So what once had to be planned and prepared behind closed doors, that's so ancient history, the 1930s. We're in a new time. Just rev up these factories. Start building the weaponry. Start building the American-made weaponry. And we've got our empire. We need it, too, because of Putin and, you know, Orange Hitler's on the other side. Europe hates America. That's the truth. Here again, dress up, go through the charade, dress up in a nice suit, come together for an hour-long summit, then go out with your pre-prepared speech, talk about how everyone loves each other, talk about how wonderful and peaceful it all is. The end of history is here. This is Macron from a couple days ago, clip one.
Before Sahel went into chaos, before the Middle East was set on fire, before war came back to the European continent, we had started rearming. Before the launch of this insane war that Russia is waging against Ukraine, before all the turbulence that we encounter today, we had ensured the strategic autonomy of France and Europe. Strategic autonomy, that is the independence in our analysis, in our action, in our strategies. That last year, in this very same place, I said we had needed to go faster and stronger. In order to be free, we needed to be feared, we needed to be strong. Not out of pleasure, but out of necessity. We're not doing this because we want to, but because that is our duty, as Marc Bloch stated. So I fixed the goal of accelerating the ambition that we first had from 2030 in order to reach a budget of 74 billion euros by 2027. 64 billion euros is an increase of 200% of the budget in 10 years.
France is saying what Germany's thinking. And more Germany's saying it outright as well. We're doing this out of necessity. We have to be feared. We need to build a Europe where the world fears Germany. Do we? The end of history is here. The death of history. Pretty soon. Well, you can almost say it now. I was going to say, who's the lone voice that has warned the world in love about what's coming? And it's been for 100 years. God has been crying aloud, sounding the alarm through his work, through his church. My father wrote this back in March of 2020. It's about France resurrecting the Holy Roman Empire. He said, a clear trend is taking place. President Macron demands what Germany wants. I don't believe Macron would ever say what he said unless Germany approved of it. He acts as a sort of puppet to Germany. France says what Germany's thinking. We had that in an article 6 years ago. And then here's Macron this week, saying we need to be feared. And we need to boost the contributions made toward defense. They always call it defense. It's never offense. France's betrayal of America and Britain should be a strong warning to this world. Macron is not just calling for a reevaluation of relations. He's calling for a European army, which will undoubtedly be led by Germany. As I say, Herbert Armstrong and my father, they've been warning about this for nearly a century. And this week, France just said the quiet part out loud. We need a united European military. And of course, Germany is the default leader in any arrangement surrounding a new European military machine, for sure. That's been the history. But we don't read history. Maybe we listen to podcasts. Maybe we scroll and look for a good clip. Maybe we scroll and look for something that shocks us into attention. Yeah, I think Hitler's he's misunderstood. This is more from Macron and his vision for Europe. Clip two.
In a few years, we will have strengthened our capacities and build new capacities in Europe, an orchestrated new strategy. Europe is becoming a power based on the different states that are members of it, committed to act in a united manner. This is a Europe that is not that of nationalism, but a Europe that will bring together the patriotic spirit of its members to make it stronger, and by acting in a united way. The message we send to the world is the following one. Yes, peace is our goal. Yes, we cherish freedom and law. And yes, we are ready to fight to defend these principles always and forever, and to pay tribute in blood if necessary. So we need to make sure that Europe becomes an active industrial military reality. If we flatter nationalism, we make a grave mistake when it comes to our own history. Patriotism, yes, but nationalism, never. And at this time when Europe is rearming, folding back on our national challenges and our national prerogatives would be a mistake. We need to work together. And we must learn from history. We also have to recognize that when it comes to drones, interceptors, and munitions, we do not produce fast enough. We do not produce at the right volume. And we need to adapt for our own needs.
Is anyone listening? And those that are, as I say, they want this. They're encouraging this. Here's Macron speaking for Europe, speaking for Germany. They don't need to do it quietly this time. They can do it right out in the open. There was a time when they were kept in check because of America's presence, because of America's strength, because of America's pride and its power. But now, this is a different time. What happened in the 1940s is ancient history. What happened 6 years ago? Ancient history. The end of history is here. It's here. One more from Macron, clip three.
Today, it is not just the stock of armaments, but the flow thereof that defines the strategic situation in Europe. We need capacity to produce enough armaments to be able to discourage our adversaries. Ukraine gives us a spectacular lesson in that regard. But let us be clear-sighted. We have taken many initiatives. We have reinvested as we've never done before. We've relaunched a wartime economy 4 years ago. But is that enough? No, it is not. Faced with international competition, faced with acceleration in all the different fields of play, faced with new adversaries, we need to continue to invest in European public funds, in French funds, as well as private funds. We need to innovate. Our military industry needs to be able to take more risks. They need to be able to take more risks and to produce faster as well. They need to mobilize European programs and funds. And they need to do everything in order to build European standards and a true European preference.
We are going to be a global power, and we want to remove the restraints of bureaucracy and make sure that we're innovative and make sure that we hit the accelerator. This is a wartime economy, he says, to the world. We're living in wartime. And so we've got to adjust. We've got to adapt. It's a new time. What happened previously? Ancient. Look at what happened to France in World War II. You would think if anyone would question German motivations, it would be France, but not this time. It's not just Nick Fuentes with his podcast in America. That thinking is all over the place. Anti-history. The end of history. We wrote an article last year. Does Donald Trump know the way to peace? Or I refer to it, I guess it's an article I wrote. But I refer to that saying, my father described how human leaders can become possessed by evil spirits, even Satan in extreme cases. He wrote that certain leaders of great powers in history no longer had the minds of human beings. They had the hearts of wild, raving beasts. That's why these empires are called beasts. That's how God labels them in Scripture. He calls the great false church in Revelation 17 a whore, a prostitute. God's, one thing about, Dinesh even brought this out. When God speaks, he's not writing a book and then having all the citations in the back and, you know, you've got the bibliography and you've got all the footnotes and everything. Because he speaks with authority. And man has rejected that for 6,000 years. Man, it's not just that. Man's been cut off from that truth, from God's reporting. And we've been going it alone. And we've got all these wild beasts surrounding us. And yet, people like the Daniel 8 man know they can just come in and flatter their way to the top. Just say the right words. Or if you say something that's shocking, just make it kind of edgy. Dress it up a little bit. Revise the history. Put in a little anti-history. These dreadful beasts conquer and enslave entire nations, my father wrote. This is what happens when you put your faith and trust in the human heart. This is what happens when you put your faith and your trust in flattery, in lies, in deception. Look at how Ezekiel 23 refers to us being betrayed by our lovers. We think they love us. Be ready for the double cross. There's at least one commentator at CNN that is looking at what's happening with NATO and Europe and the United States and is sounding somewhat of an alarm. Listen to this from CNN, clip 5.
Even people who dislike Donald Trump tend to give him credit for one thing: getting NATO to pay its fair share. American presidents have long grumbled about burden sharing. Trump has been crude, theatrical, and transactional, but the sentiment he expressed was broadly shared. And Europeans got the message. Non-American NATO countries spent 1.4% of GDP on defense in 2014. In 2025, it was close to 2.3%. But be careful what you wish for. As Europe's spending increases, the continent will become less dependent on America and therefore less deferential to it. For more than 75 years, America's dominance within NATO has given Washington enormous advantages. The U.S. has over 30 military bases across Europe, and these have allowed it to project power not just in Europe, but in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. U.S. operations in the Middle East, including the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and more recently with Iran, have depended heavily on access, basing, and overflight rights in Europe. Often, NATO countries have allowed the U.S. to use its facilities even when they disagreed with the war being waged. But as Europeans see that America is unreliable or even hostile, they will feel less need to accommodate Washington. The U.S. has assumed that its allies will always line up behind its broader strategy, including its economic campaigns. But as Celeste Wallander writes in Foreign Affairs, Europe already has its own interests and tools.
Don't you hate it when CNN gets it right? It happens every once in a while, I guess. Here, Be careful what you wish for. Turning Europe loose on its own, even as they're ramping up defense spending and viewing America as hostile. Where is this leading? How much better informed are we when you just go back a little ways in history? 70, 80 years ago, Ferguson said on that podcast he was on that it's like we have to go through this cycle every 30, 40 years and relearn the same lesson. He didn't know what he was saying there, but he's basically saying how utterly unteachable man is. There's something wrong with the human heart. That's exactly the way Jeremiah the prophet describes it. Jeremiah 17. Just one final thought here. Hosea 4, verse 1. It says, "Hear the word of the Eternal, you children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land because there's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land." In verse 6, it just says we're destroyed for lack of knowledge. It doesn't even say the knowledge of God. I guess it's implied maybe. But now we're in a post-knowledge world. Post-truth. Post-reading. Post-history. And that's why the Apostle Paul describes our world as being perilous and dangerous in these last days. I mentioned I had some other clips to just wrap up Celtic Throne. We can, I guess, save that for tomorrow. You can look forward to that. We put together an 8-minute recap of the Sunday performance, and we've got quite a backlog of feedback on the tour. So maybe we can get to a little bit of that tomorrow. But as I said at the start of the show, today marks 37 years since I happened to be the first one to read Malachi's message. It was in kind of a rough manuscript form. But it was the first time besides my father that had seen the content. And that book is the cornerstone of this work. The Philadelphia Church of God work. Let me just take you through a few verses. In James chapter 5, verse 1, it says, "Go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you." God's addressing a Laodicean congregation or movement here. The seventh era of God's church, described in Revelation 3 as being lukewarm and rich and increased with physical goods, but not rich in faith, not rich in holding fast to the truth. Verse 5, it says, "You have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. You have nourished your hearts as in the day of slaughter. You've condemned and killed the just one," it should read, "and he does not resist you." My father says in the James booklet, toward the end of his life, Mr. Armstrong was surrounded by people of hate. And you know what? Those people, they put on a nice suit. They talked in soft, measured tones. They talked about carrying on Mr. Armstrong's final wishes. They talked about doing what's right for the work. Verse 7, it says, "Be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waits for the precious fruit of the earth, and has long patience for it until he received the early and latter rain." God stresses the point of patience here. Just believe God. As I said earlier, fear God and keep his commandments. Trust God. Endure. Be patient. "Be you also patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draws near." James is emphasizing just how imminent the return of Jesus Christ is to this earth. It draws near. And the next few verses, continue with that same theme. I'll just have to skip down since we're running out of time. But verse 14 says, "Is any sick among you? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Eternal, and the prayer of faith shall save the sick, and the Lord shall raise him up." The prayer of faith, the effectual, fervent prayer, it gets results. That's what James is emphasizing in this last section. My father writes, there's a reason why God includes the specific doctrine of healing here. This is where the Laodiceans officially turned away from God. To repent, they must get back to the beginning of their rebellion. Otherwise, God can't heal them. We've got to turn from our wicked ways. Otherwise, there's not going to be any healing. It's not enough just to counter what some podcaster is out there lying about. It's much broader than that, the sin, the wickedness. Verse 16, it says, "Confess your faults one to another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much." It really does accomplish so much if it's effectual, if it's fervent. Pray without ceasing, Paul wrote. And then it says in verse 17, Elijah was a man subject to like passions as we are, and he prayed earnestly that it might not rain. And it rained not on the earth by the space of 3 years and 6 months. And again, I'll leave it to you to go through the James booklet, drawing a distinction between the Elijah of old and the end-time Elijah, who was a man of prayer, by the way. We have a program on that lined up for this weekend. The prayer pilgrimage. Mr. Armstrong made those often. Verse 18, it says, "And he prayed again, and the heaven gave rain, and the earth brought forth her fruit." So God said he would send rain after 3.5 years. And in the spiritual sense, that's what happened on July 16th, 1989. 37 years ago, my father said that refreshing spiritual rain had started on that date with one young unbaptized man. I was just a teenager at the time. We've talked about this a lot to our young people. That, look, you don't need to limit yourself because I'm young or I don't have the education or the training. God says just fear him and keep the commandments. And then God starts blessing you. God will empower you. God will answer your prayers. My father said in a message some years ago, "I think our teachers really ought to read Malachi's message. It answers a lot of," he was giving this encouragement before that particular school year. I think this was 4 or 5 years ago. "It answers a lot of basic questions that we need to answer. And this book gives us answers. Everything about what was happening in the Laodicean era, it's explained in this book. People could find their way out of all that Laodicean deception, the lies, the hatred, by studying, by reading this book, by the way, reading and studying, and then having the courage to act in faith, to break free from delusion, to break free from a post-truth era that happened in God's church following the death of Herbert Armstrong. It really is a foundational book, and as my father suggested a few years ago, it would be wise to stay grounded in the teachings of Malachi's message to God's church today. That's all we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.